Welcome to episode 11 of Father of the Grind. No, not Father of the Grind. Fathers of the Grind.
Wow. Wow. You already fired me? That's awesome. That's awesome.
I'm going to start coughing so hard. Hang on.
Way to wait for the show to start recording to be like, oh, by the way, it's Father of the Grind.
Let me try one more time. Hang on.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to episode 11 of Fathers of the Grind. I had a horrible first attempt at the intro, so you guys missed it, though. Too bad. I'm cutting that out. Derek, how's it going, man?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing, Tim?
Not too bad. Still fighting off the end of this cold cough thing. I know that you guys have it going on too, but I mean, it could be worse. But if you hear me start laughing, it turns into uncontrollable coughing. It's just that weird ending of the cold thing. I mean, for those of you with kids, you know your kids bring home all the germs, just all of the germs.
Yeah, that's what our household's been like the last 2 weeks. It's hit Eli, Emily, me, Ian. Megan's the only one, that's my wife, in case the listeners don't know, is the only one that didn't get hit really hard. She felt
sick
for like
a
day.
Wife's got it right now. And so, she's got it right now, and her voice is kind of hilarious. She was talking to my son, Kale, earlier today, and she was trying to give him some serious instruction about what he needs to do, and he was having trouble taking her seriously because her voice was kind of coming in and out. So, yeah, it's at that phase for her poor throat. But yeah, I think now that it's getting warmer out, the kids are outside more. We're a little bit less of a germ factory here in our house, trying to stay warm, and hopefully that'll spread things out a little bit. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so other than sickness and all that kind of stuff, how are things going for you guys? You got sports going on. You keeping yourselves busy?
Yeah, we're approaching the end of the basketball season for Ian and Eli. I'll give a little bit of an update. I won't bore people too much, but it was pretty cool. I didn't get to go to Ian's game last week because I don't remember what the reason was, but it was... I was sick. Duh. Yeah, I was sick. So I stayed home, and it sucks that I ended up staying home because I came... when Megan got home with Ian, the first thing they told me is Ian had his best game. He was the leading scorer. His team won. It was just everything that they hadn't done all season.
Yeah.
I was like, well, maybe he just didn't need dad there.
What a glorious day, though.
Exactly. It was awesome. Because I know the listeners can't see him, but Ian's a really, really tiny kid. So basketball would not be the sport that you would really think he should get into. I mean, for a 9-year-old, he's really, really short. My 7-year-old's almost as tall as him. He's about like a centimeter shorter than Ian. So it's a real disadvantage, but so am I. I'm really short, but I was always loved basketball. So
if players like Spud Webb and Muggsy Bogues exactly. Anything, it's that height doesn't matter in basketball.
Yeah, so I've taught him a few things. He's getting better, and I even told him last practice, I said, you keep working at it, you're going to be a little stud, because he was knocking down 3-pointers from on 10-foot rims, and he's just a little dude. So
Nice. Yeah, we don't have any sports going on right now. Actually, we were just talking about this a little bit earlier, where it's looking like a fall where pretty much every kid is going to be playing soccer.
Yeah.
But right now, we don't do the spring soccer or anything like that. We tried T-ball last year. I think we've kind of already missed the boat on that one for this spring. So it's going to be a pretty good spring in terms of our sports schedule. But we always find things to get plugged into between church and family and work and other things going on. There's always plenty happening. So yeah, as far as sports and stuff goes, we're not too busy, but for some reason I still feel like we're doing something most nights. We're taking somebody somewhere for something.
Yeah.
Or someone needs to go out to the store to pick up food because we have too many people in this house or something like that.
Well, 9 kids will do that to you. It's just
exactly.
The way life goes. So.
Yep. But otherwise, you know, life is good. Can't complain. Things are going really well. So wanted to make a quick announcement that someone in our group is trying to put together a Rocket League potentially. I think maybe you know a little more about this than I do. I'm not sure, but there was a poll posted in our Fathers of the Grind Facebook group recently. What do you know about this?
Yeah, a friend of mine, or I consider him a friend, Philippe, I met him a few years ago. He just joined the father. Is it Father of the Grind?
Yeah,
group now?
Father of the
Did
Grind.
Did you change
yeah,
the name?
I totally messed up the opening to say Father of the Grind. Anyway, Fathers of the Grind Facebook group.
So Philippe. He just joined it, and he basically hit me up and said, "Hey, you guys seem like you really like Rocket League." He loves Rocket League.
He's very perceptive.
Yeah, and so he was like, basically, let's do a league. Let's have a season. You know, let's make teams and play each other every week. So what we're thinking
keep standings,
is...
Keep
standings, yeah. Yeah, so we're thinking 2v2. We're going to try to do one game a week. So we're gonna have to work out the details of how we're going to come up with each team. I don't think we're going to do where you choose your own teammates, because I don't want all the best players buddying up and then somebody getting stuck with two people that don't play as much. Yeah. I'd like to try to maybe do a draft or something like that. But anyways... We want to get serious players, so I don't want casual. I want people that love Rocket League, that want to play it every week, and that want to win a championship to sign up, and we're going to figure it all out and try to do, like I said, one game a week. We'll figure out how long the season is.
Yeah.
We'll do an end-of-the-year tournament, that type of thing. It'll be cool.
Sounds great to me. I'm on board.
Yeah, we'll have a spreadsheet. We'll track everything. I kind of want to track the stats, too. Like, I want everybody to track their own, like, how many goals you score in the season, stuff like that. I think that would be pretty cool, so we could give out MVP awards.
That would be great. And, I mean, that would take extra work for someone to track that, whether that's you or somebody else.
I mean, I'd be willing to do it if, like, I'll have a spreadsheet. I would just need people to... at the end of your match, you would just take a screenshot so I can see your stats.
Oh, that's true. I mean, you can't get the deep level stats like first touch or whatever else, or center ball, but you can get, you know, assists, goals,
shots. I would
look
for assists,
saves.
Goals, saves, looking for the best goalies, best scorers, best setup guys. That type of stuff.
That's pretty simple then. Just take a quick screenshot of each match and send it over. Ah, all right.
So that's what I want to do.
Yeah, and it just, again, speaks to the need, and I'm not trying to bash Psyonix here. We are by far the biggest Psyonix fanboys out there, I think. But it speaks to the need of some kind of ongoing, or at least ability for players to build something like that within the game. Because they do have a season mode that has a built-in tournament at the end, and all they need to do, in my opinion, is set it up that you can do that online. Whether you include AI bots or not can be up to you. And you can set up as many teams as you want. Here's your season. There's the standings, including the stats. There's your tournament at the end. And boom, you're done. I mean, that would make that game, which is already a nearly perfect game, pretty much perfect, I think.
I don't think I would have time to play anything else. I think I would
literally get addicted
to it. And I'm already
those are the two dream modes that I wish they would add. Is I don't necessarily need any more variations on the game. I would just love to see them do a season mode and maybe even just a quick tournament mode where you click, you know, join a tournament, and then you just wait till all the spots are filled, and then whoever randomly jumped in is now part of that tournament. That would be cool too. But
so yeah, I wanted to bring it up here because if you're going to listen to the show and you're interested, and like I said, I'm making sure I'm very clear. I want, not that I'm trying to push people away, but I want people that are committed to playing. It doesn't mean if you have to be extremely good, but that you would be committed to every week playing a match. that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Hit me up, hit Philippe up. You can even hit Tim up if you don't want to talk to me, and then we'll figure out all the details of what team you'll be on and that type of stuff, and the schedule as well.
Yep, sounds good. Thank you, Philippe, for putting that together, and hopefully we can get enough interest to get a little leak going there. That'd be awesome.
Sounds cool.
All right, so let's talk about what we are currently playing before we talk about... We're going to get right into our main topic of the show after that, before we go into news. But first, what are we playing? So I am currently playing two games that I just started up this weekend, and I think I talked about them last week, too. I just started up Hitman, and it's that intro pack like I've talked about. So you start up the game, it throws you into kind of an opening cutscene to explain sort of the time frame and the Hitman timeline, where you are and what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then you get to run a test mission, which is, it looks like a movie set. So they are setting you up with they're saying, this is a mission that was carried out years and years ago. We've now set up this simulation for you to work through. And so it's this boat. There's this boat party going on. And so you can approach that from a bunch of different angles. They give you a bunch of challenges. You can replay it. Even with a level as small and compact as that is, you can replay that a ton of times. Some really interesting challenges there. So I did that twice. And then they have a second training mission, very similar. It's a much bigger looking movie set. It's like this big compound, kind of an Air Force hangar looking place. And you need to break in using disguises, using distractions, using all sorts of things that you can at your disposal. And they give you lots, again, of challenges and additional paths you can take. Very open, although compact levels for training missions. So I was having a lot of fun with that. And then so I made my way through both of those twice. Probably spent about two and a half hours on those. And then I just now started the main mission, which makes up the meat of this $15 intro pack, and that is the Paris mission. So I haven't gotten far enough in to really give you my thoughts on that. There are some of the standard Hitman glitches here and there. Some of the AI gets a little stuck on things. Sometimes if their path gets broken, sometimes there's a little bit of breaking when it comes to the textures. But it's not perfect, but none of the Hitman games have been. They've all had their glitchy issues, and if you've played them and liked them like I have, that's just something you accept with the series. So it's not none of it's game-breaking to me. None of it's even immersion-breaking. It's just classic Hitman-type jankiness at times. Kind of the same way the Assassin's Creed series can be at times, where you're like, well, that's just Assassin's Creed, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's only so much they can do to improve those type of games.
It would have been cool if they could have smoothed all of that out since Absolution. But that being said, what I've seen so far is very impressive. I do think it looks nice. Again, it's not visually stunning like some games have been the last couple of years, but it looks very nice. There's a ton of moving parts on each level, especially that Paris scene. You're at this big fashion show in what is essentially this massive castle or mansion, and there are so many people. And so the game running as smoothly as it does is already impressive. So that's the first game I'm playing, and I just started The Division last night, actually. We're recording on a Tuesday this week because of our schedules. We're a little bit early in the week, and so I just started The Division, and I'm up to level 5. I just established my base of operations. I've run probably 4 or 5 little side missions, and I can feel, and I didn't think this was going to happen. I kind of thought I'd be the one guy saying, you know, The Division is cool, but it's not for me. It's getting its hooks into me. You know, I'm starting to break down some equipment I don't need anymore and upgrade some things, and the RPG side of it's getting its hooks in me. I upgraded my first ability, and now I'm like, uh-oh, I'm starting to feel the pull. So,
no, that's good.
Hitman and Division. Yeah, they're both very good.
Yeah, I don't think I talked about this on, because Hitman hadn't technically released. I actually logged on and played that first, test mission. I liked it. I liked all the moving parts. I liked the way that it makes you think before you do something, because I'm not real good at stealth games. I've said this in the past before. Even for stealth games, I like to go in guns blazing. You know, I'm like, yeah, I like my stealth games to give me that option. Like Dishonored gives you that option. Hitman doesn't give you that option. No. So I go in there, and I start trying to use my brain and think and go, okay, how do you play this stealthy? And the first couple times I ran just that test mission, I was totally effing up. Like every time I would make a decision, I was like, oh, that alerted that guy? Well, that's stupid.
Well, they do kind of walk you through those first ones in certain ways, and if you don't do it exactly how they say, you can add that to it. You can trip alarms pretty easily.
Yeah.
But I will say that once you complete those training missions, they let you go back and try it again. And what they do is they give you anywhere from 8 to 10 different challenges, and if you select them, like track this challenge or this feat, I think they call it a feat. Track this feat, and then it will kind of give you a little waypoint on your screen to follow. Like, this is where I have to go to trigger the next part of this way of approaching it. So if you picked something where you're going to use a remote mine to blow them up, it'll kind of guide you to where to find the remote mine, where to go next to get the costume you need, the disguise you need to get where you need to go to set it. It does kind of walk you through a little bit better, at least for the training mission it did. So they provide some guideposts for you, but I'm not sure if they're going to do that throughout the main missions or if that's just for training. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is I did like it. So even though it was being like, hey, you did this wrong or whatever, it was serving its purpose. It was training somebody like me who doesn't play Hitman games. I've played like a little bit of Absolution and I kind of liked it, but I didn't really get into it. So I've played them before, but I'm not a pro. So it gives you that kind of that idea of what you've got to look forward to in the game.
Which is interesting because Absolution is a little more of a running gun if you want it to be compared to the other Hitman games. I don't know if you picked up on that, but it is a little more running gun.
I played a few missions and I was able to do that type of stuff. I could be a little bit more crazy, which is probably why some people complain about the game. Yeah. And I plan
on still fun.
Getting it on PC. I see it on sale all the time, so when it hits $5, I'm going to buy it on Steam, and I'll check it out there. I definitely want to own that one. But, again, I just tried it out. I liked it. It's not what I'm playing now, so I'm going to talk about that now. But it's something that, because it kind of hooked me, whereas I was expecting to come on here and maybe make fun of you for playing it, it's something I could see me playing later
on. Yeah, it's got a really cool tone. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this might take a little while, but we're going to get through it. Here's what I'm playing right now. I don't want to bore you all with Fallout 4. I did make some progress because I've talked about it so much. I'm getting pretty far. I hit the part where it was spoiled for me in Rocket League. So I hit that part.
Did it feel okay, though? Like, was the reveal still kind of interesting and cool, or was it totally ruined?
It's kind of lame. Because it did hurt that I did know about it, because even though they try to hide the identity, I knew when I met the person. I was like, oh, okay.
Gotcha.
But anyway, so I'm getting pretty far, obviously, in that. So the goal is to finish that, so I'm still locked into that. But I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I don't like to play one game over and over and over and over until I hate it. I like to switch every once in a while. So, something cool happened. Last Friday, I called out of work because I was sick. And I was going, you know, just through the Xbox store, and I saw Ori and the Blind Forest, the Definitive Edition. Now, I already own Ori and the Blind Forest. And for those who don't know my story, it's a pretty sweet story about how much I effing hate the game. I really actually like the game. It's just what we've talked about before in the show. I'm not good at platformers. I'm not afraid to say it. I think it's just one of those, especially with Ori and the Blind Forest, there's so much going on the screen. You've got enemies. You've got very, in my opinion, you might go, no, not really, very, very difficult platforming.
Oh, yeah. It is
some
hard.
Some of the spots, and in fact, before we started recording the show, I was playing Ori, and I'm going to talk about it, how far I've gotten. But I hit a part where, oh my gosh, like I had to like stop and think before I did something on every move because it was so frustrating and difficult at the same time. But because I'm getting further into the game, I've actually surpassed where I left off before. I'm falling more and more in love with this game. So to share the story, I bought Ori and the Blind Forest first day it came out, like I do for a lot of games, because it looked beautiful, it looked interesting, it reviewed really well, and even though it's a platformer, I was like, maybe I'll like it if it's not too hard.
Yeah.
It's actually very hard. In my opinion, it's a very hard game.
Yeah.
So I actually played it for 8 hours straight on the first day I bought it. Well, not the first day, I apologize. The first weekend after I bought it.
Okay.
I just sat there on a Saturday. I didn't have anything to do. I think I was home alone. And I just played it and played it and played it and played it. And I hit the part where, and this isn't a spoiler, but basically, or I'm not going to go into spoilers. I hit the Jinso tree or whatever it's called. The ending part.
Trying to escape.
Yes, the escape part.
Yeah.
And it took me at least 100 attempts. I mean, I'll go ahead and blame me, but at the time when I was playing it, I was also blaming the game because there was times where I would hit like the jump button and my guy wouldn't jump. And yeah. I was just beyond furious. I was like, I hate this game. I was cursing it and cussing it out. Anyways, long story short.
It's hard. Don't feel too bad. And that is a hard section, especially. That's a hard,
It's very difficult. So, and most people didn't die as much as me on that part, but whatever, like I said, I suck. So, I finally beat it. So, it almost had like a Dark Souls, Bloodborne type
feeling
to it.
So good when you get to the top. Yep.
Yeah, because the way the escape works, and again, I'm not going to go into the details, but it's a pretty long escape sequence. And if you make any mistake where you die, there is no checkpoints.
No, there's not.
You literally start over from the beginning. So if you're all the way at the end, and this did happen to me about 15 times where I was like one jump away from the ending, and I died.
Yeah.
So anyways, when you finally get through it, it's absolutely amazing feeling. So you would think, well, Derek, after you feel that, you would feel like you want to press on and beat the game. Because that at that point, you're like halfway through the game. And then I go into, I played probably like another hour or so, and I got to another section. Forlorn, I think it is. Forlorn.
Forlorn Forest?
Yeah, Forlorn Forest. And
or Ruins, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, Ruins. Ruins, not Forest. Ruins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got in there, and I started playing it in the very beginning of it. Very beginning of it, I was like, this is infuriating. It's making me think I have to go look at walkthroughs because I have no idea what I'm doing, and I just keep dying, and I don't have any ability to save my game once I get past the part, so I quit. And I never went back to Ori again. I quit for a year. I mean, I booted up, I think, one more time and played it for literally, I'm not exaggerating, 5 minutes. I was like, nope, I'm done. Uh-huh. I hate this game.
Yeah.
And it was actually when you were talking about you playing it.
Yeah.
I was like, well, maybe I should go back and give it a shot. Well, anyways, I'm sorry for the long story, boring story.
Now, I think anyone who's played Ori can probably relate, man. I really do.
Yeah. So I decided to buy the Definitive Edition. Now, here's why. Because you would go, well, why would you buy that if you decided you're not going to play the game anymore? I checked to see if there was any, like, level of difficulty changes. Because I had heard from you, because we had done some research on it, we were like, why is there a Definitive Edition? We talked about it on last week's show.
Yeah, I think we did, yeah.
Yeah, we did. And we were like, why is this being created? Did they release DLC? What is part of this Definitive Edition? Because the game's absolutely gorgeous. So you can't sell it on, well, we made it a little bit prettier.
You gotta sharpen it up. Like, no, don't touch it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I think they did. I need to go play both because I think it actually looks a little bit better, which is actually amazing that I can say that. But anyway,
I believe you.
So I saw that they have multiple levels of difficulty. And one of them's easy. And I was like, oh, easy. Perfect. Buy it. It's $5. Let's try it on easy. Let's see if I like it. So I put it on easy. I know. There's so many people rolling their eyes right now. But hey, I like to be transparent, so I'm being honest. I put it on easy. And I played it on Saturday for like 5 hours straight. I just sat there and played it. I forgot about Fallout, and I just kept playing it. And you're going, well, you put it on easy, so the game's real easy. It's not. The platforming is still difficult. They didn't change anything in the platforming. The only thing that's been basically, there's two main things that I've noticed the difference. The enemies are a little bit easier to kill.
Okay.
So you don't die as much from enemy attacks.
Right.
And I noticed this with the I have a feeling I'm saying this wrong. Jinso tree. The escape sequence. When it started, the first time it started, I didn't realize it was starting again. I just was sitting there and the water just basically drowned in me. I was like, oh, crap. Oh, crap, I'm here already.
Yeah.
And so it booted up again. I started doing it and I died real quick again. And then I did it again and I got a little bit further and I died. And I noticed it didn't start me at the beginning. So there are checkpoints. It only took me one checkpoint, though, meaning like I didn't go further and further. It only took me like 4 lives to beat the Jinso tree. So I actually have gotten better at the game.
Nice.
But it did give me a checkpoint.
Nice. And I've heard that the environmental damage isn't as bad, whatever that means. That's one of the things they listed.
Is that talking about like the enemies? Or
maybe.
Oh, maybe when you jump into spikes. But I still die. If that happens, I die.
Okay.
I bet you in spikes in the original, I'll have to go back and play it. If you hit a spike, you automatically die.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And this one, if you hit a spike and you have a full health bar, you lose like 2 or 3 health.
Okay. Okay.
And then if you stay in it or jump and hit another spike, you die automatically. So I guess it gives you like an extra hit, but that hasn't really impacted me because every time I jump in spikes, I die. Like,
have you gotten farther than you got last time so far?
Yes, and that's what I was going to talk about. So tonight I played again some more. I actually have beaten the second escape.
That one's even harder.
Session. It took me about 5-6 lives. I did hit one checkpoint again. So once I figured out what I had to do, it's not as long. The Jinso tree is longer, but this one was more difficult to me because I felt like I had like 9 things I was watching at the same time. And I will say, again, this one, at least, compared to the Jinso tree, is definitely impacted by the easy difficulty, not just because of checkpoint, but because it's easier to die off things hitting you. So my guess is that I didn't take as much impact per hit. Whereas maybe regular Ori would be like, two hits, you're dead, you know, type thing.
Well, and it only gets more and more... I think it's almost like a fast-paced puzzle by the end of that game, because they're like, okay, here's all these tools we're going to unlock for you little by little with each level and each new boss and each new area. You know, everything from a double jump to a wall climb, and now you can jump off the walls. Now you can do like that, you can use projectiles or enemies to do that second jump where you point the arrow which direction you want to go. So you've got all these different tools they give you, and then by the end, you're required to use all of them in the perfect way in order to make it all the way in. You have to hold on to this one little small section of wall until the little blob shoots a thing at you. Then you have to jump at the right time and use that projectile to get up even higher. And like, it becomes almost, in my opinion, like a fast-paced puzzle game, because you have to do it right, put these all these pieces together to traverse the levels. So to me, that's what makes it kind of a brilliant game. It's a brilliant design, because most platformers
game.
Are just jump and shoot, or, you know, jump on their heads. But this one, it's a really fast-paced, beautiful puzzle game, I think.
I think anybody who, you know, the Jesse Whites, you, there's a
John,
few.
John Martin,
who loves it. The people that can beat that game on normal difficulty, hats off to you guys, seriously. Either you have great patience, or you're just really, really good, or you're both. But for me, I'm enjoying it more on easy. I'm just going to say I'm going to beat it, because I'm pretty much towards the end now. I actually got to the cutscene where... And again, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just giving Tim an idea where I'm at. Cutscene where I discover why the
Kuro
antagonist is doing what he's doing.
Is antagonizing.
Yes.
So isn't it's that, isn't cool. that what? That's quite a moment, isn't it? That's where the game turns emotional a little bit, I think.
Exactly. So that was why I wanted to finish this. This game gives me a reason. So for people that are like, dude, why would you play this game if you don't like platformers? I don't hate platformers. I just get frustrated by them. If I was good at them, I'd like them. But the reason is this game offers you an emotional reason to start it, to see it through, and finish it. It really does. And for the year that I walked away from the game, and you can ask anybody, you, Jesse, all of them that I've had conversations about, I'll always put hashtag F Ori. But the reason I'm so angry is because I wanted to beat it. Because
it defeated you for a little while there.
Exactly. And I can't say, and I won't get cocky and be like, well, I beat it now. I had a little help. I paid $5 to get easy. But like I said, it's still a difficult game, still a very challenging game, but... Anyways, I'm talking about it for a long time. I'm talking about it passionately because I love it.
Yeah.
So far, I love it.
Everyone has turned something to easy mode at some point. If they say they haven't, they're lying to you. We've all done an easier mode at some point, I think.
So this is a good game. So I'm playing that. I'm playing Fallout 4. I'm playing The Division. My quick review of The Division is I'm a level 9, and I'm not really feeling it. I don't hate it. But I played it by myself for the first couple hours. I played it. I loved it. I was like, oh, this is my jam. This is my game. I love third person shooters. I love cover base.
Yeah.
I love RPGs. Yeah. I love looting. This is everything I want in a game. And so I loved it. And I even made a post saying game of the year. I did it as a joke, but you know, just to let people know, I really like this game. But as I kept playing it, and I've been only playing it by myself, I've just been like, this is kind of boring. Like, I didn't get bored with Destiny playing by myself. This I'm getting kind of bored with. So,
okay. I haven't gotten far enough into it.
You're hooked, because maybe I'll play with you. I am still waiting for my brother, so once he gets internet, we will play.
Let's go, James.
If Tim wants to join in, awesome. So there's that. And then today, right before I started playing Ori, I was playing Far Cry Primal. I got another hour into it. Really good game. Again, I'm only 2 hours in, so I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm in love with it. But everything so far that it's doing, I'm like, wow, I really like this way more than I thought I would.
Yep. That's my exact experience, yep.
Exactly. So, not really a spoiler, but in Far Cry Primal, you tame animals. Mm. So I got to tame my first two animals today. I tamed an owl and I tamed a wolf. And it opens up the game even more.
Yeah.
because one of the things I was getting worried about, and I even texted you, I was like, how do I do this? Yeah. Because I was running out of weapons, and it kept saying my inventory is full, and I'm like, well, how am I going to pick up stuff to actually build a weapon if I have an inventory that's full and I can't pick anything up? So I was real worried, but having a wolf on my side is helping out a little bit because I can just attack anybody with a wolf. So I'm loving that so far.
By the way,
the wolf
opens up your little mini map radius is bigger with the wolf, and with other animals it's a little bit smaller. So the wolf opens up that radius for you. Also, whenever you're at any kind of town or campsite, just load up on all the essential ingredients, because anything that you harvest after that automatically goes back to your little stash. So I would just load up and fill up each time. That way you've got all the hardwood and all the animal skins and everything else you need to make your spears and whatever. So
yeah, but so far I really like it. I don't know, I think I will probably be done with Fallout 4 within the week.
Nice.
Or so I should be done with Ori. So that would free up space for The Division and Far Cry. But I also have, and this is my up next game, Twilight Princess. I talked about it last time. I'm only a few hours in, and I really do want to play it, so I don't want to forget it. I want to keep writing it on my little script here and keep talking about it in the show, so I actually do play it. So my hope is to get done with Fallout 4, Ori, which is kind of a surprise game. I didn't expect to start it and finish it. Hopefully finish those, and then I will probably switch between Far Cry and Twilight Princess for single player, and then The Division for multiplayer.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I don't think is there anything major coming out between now and Uncharted 4 that you're just like, yeah, I have to get this? I mean, I guess Quantum Break might be the only one between now and then.
Yeah, I mean, the big one would be Quantum Break.
Okay, so you might have a window of time here, I guess.
There's a few games in March I'd like to get. Like, I am going to get Resident Evil 6, but I don't know if that's, because I've already beat that game, I don't know if it's going to be something I'm going to be like, well, I got to put The Division on the back burner because I got Resident Evil 6. But you know how big of a Resident Evil fan is, so I probably will play it. But yeah, so there's nothing huge coming out until Quantum Break, so hopefully that'll give me time to get through some of these games. But overall, it's a good time for games. I'm just, everything I'm touching, besides The Division, and again, I'm not going to blame The Division. I think it's a good game, and everybody who's playing it actually loves it.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few that's going, well, I'm not really digging it, but I'm not also... I also said that about Fallout 4. I started it and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, and then you came back to it, and
now I have nothing but praise for Fallout 4.
Yeah, no, The Division is good. It feels good. I like the cover-based shooting. I like it a lot, so I'm with you. I did get the Far Cry Primal Platinum Trophy over the weekend, which is not something I typically pursue. But for those of you who like to get trophies, but maybe it's not something that you hunt for, you're not a trophy hunter, but you like to get them, Primal's a great example of a game that if you just play it and you enjoy the open world and just want to knock everything out, the trophies come pretty naturally, and then the platinum's not that hard. If you want to spend a little extra time after beating it, it's not that hard. So, all right, cool. It sounds like a lot of good games have been out already this year. We're here 2.5 months into the year, and there's already been so many games that have come out that both you and I are like, whoa, I don't know how I'm going to have time for this and everything else. A lot of good games already this year. Quick thought here, really quickly, for those of you who are parents and your kids like to play, or just wondering what the content is like in some of these games, really the only game that there's two games we've talked about that I can highly recommend that you either let your kids play if they're old enough or are okay for them watching. Number one is Ori. My kids, I love the game Ori. It's very colorful and vibrant, very artistic. It's beautiful. The story is interesting. I highly recommend that one. And then also, I think at least for older elementary, middle school, and up, The Division's probably okay. It's kind of equivalent to a PG-13 movie. It's got some violence, but it's not, I don't think, so far, unless there's something coming up, I don't think it's incredibly gory. So I put that on par with like a PG-13 James Bond or Bourne movie or something like that. So if your kids are allowed to watch kind of action secret agent movies, The Division's fine. I mean, make your own rules. I'm not telling you what to do, but I do think that games like Hitman, Fallout 4, and Far Cry Primal do err on the gory side at times, depending on what you're doing. Hitman's not quite as bad, but Fallout 4 and Far Cry Primal for sure. Just a fair warning, there's especially Primal, holy cow, there's a lot of content in there that's not for kids' eyes, in my opinion. So just a quick parent review there for those of you interested. All right.
Nice.
Derek, I know you're a very emotional guy. I know. Yeah. I know you shed a tear from time to time.
Yep.
A question that's come up in our group recently I thought was a great question was, have you ever gotten emotional over a game? And if so, what games are they? So I started thinking about this, and there was a lot of great answers to this, and we're going to share a bunch of these, and then each of us will share too. But before we talk about what games have made us emotional or gotten an emotional response, let me ask you this. What do you think makes a game, and we're trying to keep it focused on games here, although there are some crossover to movies, I think, and TV.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes a game emotional, do you think?
Well, are you talking about, like, sad emotions? Are you just talking emotions in general?
Let's just go. I mean, let's open up a little bit broader. Everyone thinks sad. You're right. Everyone says sad. Open up a little bit broader, though. Like, just general emotions.
Well, I feel a lot of anger. I mean, Ori brought a lot of anger out of me. Bloodborne brought a lot of anger out of me. Those are usually the emotions that I feel. I don't feel a lot of, like, sadness, and here's the reason why, and we'll go into more detail especially when we start talking about the community and their response to this. And this isn't me trying to be tough guy, cool guy, because I'll tell you what makes me emotional. There's only one thing that gets me to tear up. But when I'm playing a video game, while I might hit a part that I'm like, oh, clearly they want me to cry, I'll be like, oh, that's sad. But my brain, I don't know why, it'll just go, it's just a video game, who cares?
No, but you're like, a robot.
Yeah, like, it doesn't, like, I don't really care about them.
I acknowledge this is sad.
This is very effective. My tears.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, I do struggle with the sad part. My emotional reaction, the games that you'll see me like, oh my god, this game, and I know you've seen this before because I've talked about it, that I like respond to is usually anger, like something that's pissing me off, like I feel like it's better than me, or I don't grasp it, or it's BioShock type games where Ken Levine constantly outsmarts me. Not that it's really hard to do, but he makes me go, what? Huh? How did you write that? And it's not how you write that in a negative way. It's I'm in awe of where his brain goes and where he's taking me and how I have to sit there and think over and over on what he's trying to tell me and what type of story he's trying to tell. So those are usually my emotional reactions. For a game, and I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm just going to state it, and anybody who's played it is going to know exactly what I'm talking about. For a game like The Last of Us, the game is, and even Ori, I mean, Ori is a great example. It immediately wants you to have this emotional sadness reaction in the beginning of it, and I see it, I acknowledge it, and I'm like, that's cool, it hooks me, but I don't get sad where I'm like, aww. You know what I mean? I don't know if you know. I gotcha.
I know what you mean, although that's not the response that I give, but I do know what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't cry over it, is what I'm saying.
I'll tell you what I think makes a game emotional. It's when the game maker is able to somehow connect an experience that maybe you've had or somehow, for some reason, can empathize with having. So maybe you haven't lost a loved one, but in seeing a specific experience play out on screen, you can empathize with that person who did. Or maybe just because you're close to someone, you have that relationship with a family member, a parent, a child, a sibling, and you see that loss and you can imagine it or empathize with what that might feel like. So that's part of it, is the loss, the sadness. But I think there's also emotions that are brought up through some kind of victory. So when a game, especially when a game is really hard, we talk about the Dark Souls type of games, and they kind of set the precedent for really hard games that are incredibly satisfying. And this is coming from someone who's not really a big Dark Souls player or gamer. But I still understand that satisfaction, that victorious feeling, that sigh of relief, that feeling of conquering something when something seems insurmountable and you finally overcome it, whether it's Ori, Dark Souls, or games like Ali, I think we've talked about before, or Trials, that motorcycle game. So that can make a game emotional in more of a accomplishment way. So there's more than just sad emotions, I think, that can come from it. And there's also, I think there's anger emotions that can come out. And again, not just necessarily playing poorly or having trouble, but also at characters in the game, similar to like a TV show or movie. You know, you love to hate certain villains.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of emotions, I think, that can come out Certain games, and not many of them, make me laugh, but certain games really make me laugh hard. You know, we've talked about a few of them, like whether it's Borderlands, Borderlands 2, or Portal 2. There's been a few of them out there that really make me laugh. I've heard Tales from the Borderlands is quite funny.
It is. It's good.
So yeah, there's a lot of different ways games can emote, and I think it has to do with connecting with your audience in a way that, number one, either triggers some kind of emotion, and that's not always a bad thing, but it sets off some kind of emotion they can empathize with, or gives them an experience that's some kind of an adrenaline rush. There's a couple of different ways that a game can be emotional, I think. So let me ask you this then, Derek, what games come to mind and have given you, and you've already named Ori maybe as one that was trying to, even if it didn't, but what games come to mind for you when it comes to an emotional response?
Well, I mean, Ori, it did its job. I'm just saying, like, and you'll see later as you read the comments from the community, I don't weep or cry, but Ori did its job. The Last of Us did its job. I think the key is making me care for a character enough to get an emotional response, and right. I feel like Ori does a really good job real quickly of doing that, and also The Last of Us does it on multiple occasions. There's the beginning.
Oh, man. Yeah, the opening of Last of Us is stunning, yeah.
They do a great job, but even middle to end of the game, they get you to care about some characters, and things happen to them. So there's been several games that have done it. BioShock on multiple levels, both BioShock and BioShock Infinite have done it. Made me care about characters and their fate and what the heck's going on. With them, and I'd say those are the big ones. But like I said, nothing has made me cry. The Walking Dead season 1 did a good job of trying. I laughed at it, but because I was just like, this is so obvious what you're trying to do. But nothing's made me cry or anything. So yeah, like you wrote in the notes, because I'm a robot.
That's right. You are a robot. And that's okay. We still put
beep
up with
boop,
you.
Anyway. Beep boop beep boop beep.
All right. Well, I've got several, and I'm gonna skip a few of them because some of our community members named some of these. I want to give them a chance to share too.
Yeah.
But let me, before I talk about some of the games that have gotten an emotional response from me. I don't openly weep. So the words I'm trying to get out, and I just can't phrase it the right way. I'm not really the kind of person who openly weeps. So people talk about that, like, oh, I just cried and cried and cried. I'm like, well, I don't really do that. There's been times in my life where emotions have been heavy enough and big enough things have happened in my life that, sure, you know, I've had over-the-top emotional responses. Sure, mm-hmm. We all have. But as far as, like, watching a movie or a TV show or a game, I have had very many, you know, tearing up, choked up type moments. I can only think of maybe one or two with TV or movies that have really made me actually cry. Everything else is just you get choked up. You know, you get that knot in your throat and you get the tears. So this is, when I think of a game that makes me emotional, I think of that. Like, okay. Oh, it got me choked up. It got me teary-eyed, and it got me kind of like, oh, man, that, and maybe a little sniffly, you know?
Okay, you sound just as robotic as I do.
Well, I just don't openly weep about that kind of thing, because usually, for the most part, those games move from those moments into where you're playing the game again. So I don't know, there's something about it where it doesn't dwell on it, so I don't dwell on it, and then I move into the next thing. But I will say that Ori and the Blind Forest is a great example. I think that does have a lot of emotional moments, the beginning, and then there's motivation explained kind of right in the middle, and then the final few scenes. I won't ruin it for you, but they do a great job at making those final encounters very emotional and meaningful based on what they've already set up, and I loved that. I really liked what they did there. I didn't see this one mentioned, so I was going to mention Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Remember that one?
Yeah, that one, I mean, I won't spoil it, but it definitely tries to tell an emotional story. And
that one got me closest to crying of all these games, I think. Just because of the way, again, we're going to say the word spoil a lot, okay? Sorry, everybody. I don't want to spoil the ending, but the way that they put it together at the end, and there's a certain scene at the end that ties back to an opening scene, there's a certain gameplay mechanic that has to happen because of... I can't explain it without giving it away, but there's something that happens at the very end, the very final little thing you have to do as the character, that ties back to an earlier moment in the game, and it got me real choked up. it got me really emotional. Again, because I've got two brothers too. One in particular that I grew up being very, very close to. So yeah, I mean, I can totally relate to that with the brothers thing. Super Nintendo games and the RPGs like Chrono Trigger, they had moments that they got me. You know, deaths of certain characters got to me. I would say more so with Final Fantasy VI. That's the first time that a villain in a game I really hated, and that was Kefka from Final Fantasy VI. He's just the worst, and he does some horrible things, and that he even kills a character who's not part of your party, but he's an awesome character, and I was so mad when he got killed. And so, yeah, that got an emotional, more anger response from me, I think. There's a PC game out that I highly recommend. I don't know if it's on consoles or not. It's called To the Moon, and it looks like a Super Nintendo. It looks like an SNES game. It's got that 16-bit overhead. It looks very much like an old Final Fantasy game. But it's not. It is very much more of an adventure game. You know, you're walking around exploring, listening to conversations, making little choices, you know, discovering things. It's very much an adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an RPG game. But To the Moon was very emotional, very much a reflection on life and what have I accomplished in my life and that kind of thing, while being very well written and funny. Very good game. Not too long either. I'll mention Shadows of the Colossus, but someone else mentions it later. Shadows of the Colossus has some emotional moments, specifically at the very end. And then, of course, two of my favorite RPGs ever, Suikoden 1 and 2. They both have very emotional moments in the last two-thirds of the game, where there's sacrifice-type moments in both those games. They're different moments, but they both involve a sacrifice of sorts. And, yeah, very emotional. So there's a bunch, and that's probably not the entire list. Those are the ones off the top of my head as I was thinking through this. That got an emotional response from me. So as I'm listing those, it's funny. There's not too many of those that are super new. I think the most recent one would be Ori.
Yeah.
Maybe Brothers from a few years ago.
Brothers only like 2 or 3 years old.
But I do agree Last of Us has, especially the opening, although there are emotional moments throughout the rest of that game, but especially that opening, I think maybe just because it was so jarring and so like, wow, that's what this game's going to be, huh? You know, it's one of those moments.
Oh, you know what? I did leave one off that I recently played that I feel like does a great job of... even the show does it, too, is Game of Thrones. Telltale's does a great job with the game, and then the show also does it as well. Show is, without spoiling it, the show loves to, in the books, I guess... loves to make you care about people and then taking them away from you. So the game Absolutely. Does a great job of that as well. And it's gotten to the point where because they do it so often, you kind of can figure it out.
Right.
So it's hard for you to care about somebody because you're like, oh, I really like that person. Well, I no longer care about them because I know they're going to die in the next few episodes or something like that. But anyways, the game does a great job with all the characters. And it actually, towards the end, puts you in a situation where you have to choose between certain people, and you decide their fate. And when it happened a couple of times, I was like, "Oh, I'm really upset by this. Like, I'm not crying or anything, but I'm upset." Where the point where I was like, "Maybe I should reload my save and make a different decision." So,
yeah,
hats off
yeah.
to Game of Thrones and Telltales. They did a great job with that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's hear from the community a little bit. We've got some crybabies in our group, so let's hear what they have to say. We'll start with Philippe, since he also suggested the Rocket League tournament idea, or season idea. We'll give his first take on this emotional games discussion, and he says that Metal Gear Solid 3, he's a big Metal Gear fan, obviously. Metal Gear Solid 3, that ending scene, and I'll just say where everything is explained, that'll avoid any spoilers if you've missed that game, and I totally agree, that is a very emotional scene. You've played that, right? End of Metal Gear Solid 3?
Yeah.
With Big Boss? Okay.
Yep.
Also, Metal Gear Solid 4, I'm not familiar with this one, but he says the microwave tunnel part. He said that was very emotional. And then I want to quote what he says here. He says, "I was on the verge of crying when Quiet was listening to Heaven's Divide and Metal Gear 5. Does that count?" So yes, it totally counts. Jesse White says, "In Halo 4, the Chief and Cortana scene," which I have not gotten to yet, but he lists that one. And then he also lists one that I took off my list so others could talk about it, and that is The Walking Dead Season 1, those final scenes. And I totally agree with two main characters there. So really, really powerful emotional scenes there at the end. That's the first time I realized that they do a good job at at giving you lots of choices, but in the end, there's kind of this inevitable wow
moment. Matter what.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 3.
Gunblade Hero with that name that his parents gave him, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
He agrees with me that Suikoden 2 has quite an emotional moment. And he also lists a certain character's death in Final Fantasy VII.
Seriously, if people don't know who died in Final Fantasy VII.
I know.
VII,
I think...
I haven't even beat the game, and I know.
People have that character's name and the word death as their username these days. I mean, it's just, it's very common. Everyone knows. Sebastian Douglas says, The Witcher 3, he got one of the alternate endings I didn't know about, and it sounds very, very sad. He talked quite a bit about it, but I won't spoil it for you guys. But apparently there's some alternate endings in The Witcher 3 that are not as satisfying as the one I got.
I was going to say, based off some of the decisions he made and how he played it, very, very bad things happened to Geralt. So.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. And then he says the ending of Final Fantasy X, and I like what he wrote here, so I grabbed his quote. He said, "No game has made me cry like this one did. This is Final Fantasy X. It was all happy and everyone was happy, and then boom, you realize fill in the blank has to go, and it just hits you like a train wreck, and the tears start rolling. I didn't think a video game could make me cry like that." So Sebastian's just openly admitting, like, yeah, man, that brought out a major emotional response. And I do remember the ending of that. It surprised me at the end of Final Fantasy X. So, yeah, that's a good one. Good pick.
Final Fantasy X is a outstanding game. It's my favorite Final Fantasy, and it still didn't make me cry.
Well, you're a robot.
Well, can I interject?
You can.
I do, because, again, I didn't write this stuff out, so I wanted to just kind of think about them. Mass Effect 3... had a very emotional impact on me. Now, again, didn't cry, but I know out of all the games, especially like an action RPG, it had me... Let me put it this way. It's one of the few games that I was so invested in the characters, because you think about it, if you start with Mass Effect 1, and then you continue your save to Mass Effect 2, and you continue it to 3, you're playing with and meeting these characters for 2 to 3 games, depending on when they entered the scene.
That's a full trilogy, with each one being a massive game. Yeah.
Exactly. So you have the lead character, Shepard, who you're controlling, and then you have multiple characters from Mass Effect 1 that stay with you throughout the whole franchise, or the whole trilogy. And you meet a bunch of new ones in 2 that hang out with you in 3. And certain characters don't make it, based off your choices. So it's kind of got that Telltale vibe to it. Mass Effect does a great job. The entire third game is the ending. So the entire game, you're saying goodbye to certain people that you loved and literally cared about. So I will
just
say...
Just like BioWare has done to all their employees recently.
Yes.
Just one at a time.
You have reached the end of your trilogy. But basically, 3, the entire game, I'll say. I won't say the ending. The entire game is the ending to that trilogy.
Okay.
And they do such a great job when you hit certain, I'll say it, certain deaths that you're just like, oh, no, is there a way I can save them? Oh, no, I can't. This is actually the story. Or there are certain people that you can save, but based off choices you made so far into or earlier in the game, there's no going back. It's just how the game played out. So great job.
All right, this next guy, he called me out last time for skipping his last name, saying that I was afraid, so I'm going to go ahead and take a stab at his last name again, because I failed a couple episodes ago. It's Jose Jimenez.
Jimenez. So he's from China, right?
Yeah. Okay, Jose Jimenez. He says, gone home, and I love this. This made me laugh. He says, gone home. Because at first I thought, yeah, Gone Home's got some emotions to it. He says, anger and disappointment at the reality of what that game is. Or isn't, in this case.
Yeah, he sounds like me. I mean,
yeah, he totally does. Jose, I hate to break it to you, man. That's as Derek as it gets right there, that comment.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't his exact quote, but I tried to paraphrase without giving away details. I did that to all these. I paraphrased a little bit to take out any details.
Yeah.
Jonathan Sundberg, he says, or is it Jonathan? Sundberg
Yonatan.
Says...
Yonatan.
Oh, boy. They're not doing this again, are we?
Yeah, you understand.
Ending of Metal Gear Solid 3, he said he cried like a baby for a solid 20 minutes after the credits finished rolling. Those feels. And yeah, it is. It's a powerful moment when you realize some things.
You know what's
funny
is I've known him for, like, obviously I've known him through online, not personally. the last few years, and to see him write out that he cried like a baby for 20, his, and you'll get to know it, his personality does not come across as somebody who would cry over anything. He comes across as very like direct and harsh, kind of like me. Yeah. So I have trouble picturing him being emotional.
That's like Frank Clark
saying he would cry over a video game.
I wouldn't believe.
Frank that. Clark would be like, "Oh, that person died, bitch."
Oh boy. All right, Nate Bacon says, "Telltale's Game of Thrones." He agrees with you.
Yes,
he says the Max Payne flashback. Yes, I remember that. Yeah, that was powerful.
Yeah.
Life is Strange roof scene. Yep, agree with that.
Nope.
Final Fantasy VII death. Hitman saving Victoria in the nunnery. That was a cool moment. I don't know if I got emotional, but it was a cool moment. BioShock 2 saving Eleanor. Gears of War 3. There's a sacrifice in Gears of War 3 that happens. That's pretty emotional.
You have not played Gears of War 3?
I have not. Oh, I have not.
Gosh.
And he says, and I know I'm in the minority, but the way that... I don't know if this is a spoiler or not. Have you played Halo 5? Is that last sentence there a spoiler? I don't know.
No, you can read that.
He says the way that Halsey cares and believes in John in Halo 5.
Yeah, that's pretty clean.
Okay, cool. All right, so thanks, Nate. There's a lot of them. Just like me, a nice big list. And I'm guessing, knowing Nate, he probably has others that he would have come back and mentioned too. Gaston Sanya says a few scenes from Tales of the Borderlands. Specifically, he mentioned some from episodes 4 and 5.
Let me say, he mentioned some emotional scenes from them. So, Tales from the Borderlands is always, you always hear it's humorous, it's funny. It does have some emotional scenes, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and he kind of, I mean, and I don't, we did kind of warn there's going to be spoilers in here, and I happened to read these just to see what they were. So he did give away some details from those.
Mm-hmm.
So don't read those comments, you guys, if you happen to go in the group and you want to see what these are. Don't read them if you're afraid of spoilers, because there are some details in here. But it sounds pretty interesting. I didn't expect that from that Tales game. Matt Keel says the ending of Limbo. I'll read his comment. I liked the way he wrote this. He said, "You watch this little man endure the darkest, dankest, and most dangerous traps through physics, gravity changes, to reach a serenely quiet moment. The moment you feel like is deja vu. You've been here before, and you're not sure if it's happening again." And that's a really great way of describing exactly how that game plays out. Really, really interesting ending with zero dialogue. Dan Phillips says, "The Last of Us. The opening had me in tears." I'm with you there, Dan. I was definitely choked up there, too. "Several beats throughout the story had me emotional, and the final playable sequence at the ending turned me into an emotional train wreck. It tore me up." So thanks, Dan. Yeah, a lot of people agreed with Last of Us. Thomas James Juretis? Juretis?
Yeah.
Juretis. Same thing. Opening of Last of Us, season one of The Walking Dead, and a few other moments in Walking Dead. The death of a character in Heavy Rain, which I'll omit that character's name. There's a scene that I didn't think about this one. I'd only heard about it. Spec Ops: The Line. There's these unintended consequences of dropping white phosphorus on the enemy, and he was describing that, and that does sound pretty sobering.
Spec Ops: The Line does an absolutely amazing job of basically 180-ing everything you know about military shooters.
That's what I've heard. That's why I bought it on PC right before my laptop crapped out, and now I've got it sitting in my Steam library just looking at me, unplayable.
I mean, it's a solid game. I won't say it's a bad game. I know it gets kind of crapped on for being like not a very like interesting game when it comes to gameplay mechanics, and gets praised for its story. But it's a fun, solid game, but the story, like, that scene that he's talking about, and even the ending, you're like,
Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's powerful, yeah. Final Fantasy IX, I'm glad he brought this one up. The Mage Village and the death of a certain character's mother. Yep, agree with that. Metal Gear Solid 1, that's one of the first times, other than the Super Nintendo RPGs, that I experienced an emotional moment with the Sniper Wolf scene. And then he mentions a few other scenes from Metal Gear Solid 3, as well as from 5. He mentions the death of a character in Fire Emblem Fates, which I omitted the name there. And then, of course, there's a major death in Red Dead Redemption. And I was like, yes, that moment was crazy. And that's a really interesting combination of gameplay and an emotional moment where there's, you can try all you want, but there's nothing you can do. It's an amazing ending to that. And then the death of a certain character again in Ni No Kuni, which I have not played either.
Great game.
our friend and listener, one of the most emotional moments, I think this is more of like an anger moment for him, is Fathers of the Grind, just in general.
He could have shed a few tears.
Yeah, it could have been a crying. It's true. It could have been a crying emotional response. But sorry about that, Bobby. Yeah, we apologize for being here.
I think he's more disappointed that I'm part of Fathers of the Grind. I think he would approve of your intro that I think you're editing out.
Father of the Grind?
Yeah, you introed with Father of the Grind.
And he would prefer that.
Yeah, he'd probably prefer that.
Manuel Sandoval, who, by the way, you guys, is an absolute beast at Rocket League. Manuel says, Red Dead Redemption and Last of Us. Eric Madison, he mentioned a few others that were already mentioned, and he also added Dragon Age Inquisition. He said there was a powerful, unexpected emotional moment in that story as well. Robert Snow, I love this addition from Robert. He says, Counter-Spy, when I found out there was no Platinum Trophy. And I agree with that, because I either was 95 or 100% in that, and I realized there was no Platinum. I quickly deleted it. I was like, get out of here, Counter-Spy. James Flaherty mentions Journey, and I believe a few others echoed Journey.
I'm rolling my eyes right now.
And then our friend, who we both do an awesome job pronouncing his name, James Harubi, says Tales from the Borderlands and The Last of Us. So we had a ton of people that submitted their ideas, their thoughts. That was actually a really great thread on that post. It was interesting to hear people's thoughts, and then lots of replies to each comment. And so, yeah, thank you guys for chiming in on that. If you have any additional ones, feel free to let us know. I'm interested to hear what games, and by emotional, what do you mean by that? Some of you have openly admitted, you know, it made me weep, it made me cry for 20 minutes. Some of you just say, yeah, these games made me emotional. I'm curious if that means the same thing for all of you. Or are you like Derek, you're just a complete robot? Or are you like me, where you do get choked up and, you know, the tears start to well up, but you don't quite let them all flow? And where do you land? Where you land on this emotional spectrum here?
Sad, scene, tear. Good job, video game.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, you guys, and then come back with some news. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Let's talk about some news. This has already been, it's only Tuesday, and GDC is currently going on. So there's announcement after announcement coming out, and specifically some really big news that we'll talk about first. But even though we're recording this on Tuesday, you're not going to hear this until probably Monday for most of you. That's when you download it. It comes out late Sunday nights most weeks. So there's going to be some big news between now and then that we'll miss. So I apologize for missing anything. Obviously, we're not necessarily a news show. We just like to talk about news and then what our thoughts on it. And so anyway, inevitably, there's going to be some news that we miss. So whatever. Yell at us about it later.
I don't. Oh my gosh, my coffee. I don't think anybody really cares about
what we say,
except unless we're talking about, like, Neesum XXX. That's probably the only thing people care about.
The Neesum.
I need All right. some. I need some XXX.
All right, the biggest news, let's talk about it first to get it out of the way, because I think there's mainly just some details to cover, but there's going to be a lot more discussions about this when we move forward. PlayStation VR price and release window has been announced, finally, and that just happened today. During a presentation at the GDC conference, the Game Developers Conference, Sony cleared up two major lingering questions about the PlayStation VR headset, its price and release date. It confirmed that the PlayStation 4-powered device will cost $400, or $399 to be exact, and will arrive in October of this year. That's a delay, as the device was originally scheduled to come to the market in the first half of this year, but it's not really a surprise. Most people expected, they were hoping for a spring or summer release, but most people expected a fall release. If you check out this article on GameSpot or really any other outlet, you'll be able to see some of the images included, which shows what comes with your VR. It shows all the different cables and connections and things that come with it. But just as a comparison, the Oculus Rift is going to go on sale just in a few weeks here for $600, and then the HTC Vive arrives in April for $800. And so this is definitely the more cost-friendly, I should say, device. It does not require a PC, and so that increases its cost friendliness because it just runs on the PS4, and the device itself costs less. Now, to be clear, you're going to need the PlayStation camera. I think they call it the PlayStation Eye, right? You're going to need that in order to make this thing function, to work correctly. And if you don't already own one, you'll have to go pick one up. It's not included. And I think they run anywhere from $30 used, I've heard, all the way up to $60 new. Not breaking the bank, but the reality is you're really going to have to spend closer to $500 for this device, simply because you're going to probably have to buy some extra equipment unless you already own the PlayStation camera. It also, you can use it with Move controllers, but you don't have to. You can use a DualShock 4, for those of you curious. You don't have to buy Move controllers, but you can. And I'm sure that some games are going to recommend it, maybe even require it.
I was going to say, there are going to be some that are going to require it. Like, you're not going to be able to play all games if you don't have Move.
Right,
but
right.
My hope, and the only reason why I was even interested in VR, was not for, like, Kinect Move style games. I want games where I can sit in my seat like I would if I was playing Ori or something like that, put a headset on, and use my DualShock controller to play in a game and actually feel like I'm in it without having to stand up and kick my leg or move my arms. I don't want another Wii, Kinect, or Move experience. I want a better version of what I'm already doing now. So that's like my biggest
fear. And the big part of that is the games, right?
Yeah, that's,
I mean, the biggest part of that's going to be the games. So let's talk about what they say with the games. So president of PlayStation, Andrew House, he went ahead and said there are over 230 developers building content for PlayStation VR right now. Now, I know public relations and marketing speak
exactly
when I see
what
it.
He's talking about. I mean, he's not talking about 230 games.
He's not talking about 230 games. And I know PR speak when I see it. It's all about finding the stats and finagling them and mentioning them in a way that's still true technically, but maybe a little misleading to make you sound better. So 230 developers building content sounds great. That does not mean 230 individual products are currently in production. That being said, that does mean there's a lot of people that are working on it. So that should be a positive thing in general, even if the number itself might be misleading. He does say that there's more than 160 games currently in development for sure. And it also says that 50 of them are supposed to launch by the end of this year. So if it's the launch in October, you could say that there should be, in theory, over 50 PSVR games in that first initial launch window after release. And that includes Eagle Flight from Ubisoft, Eve Valkyrie from CCP Games, Headmaster from Frame Interactive, Res Infinite from Enhanced Games, Wayward Sky from Uber Entertainment, Riggs from Sony, Tumble VR from Sony, Until Dawn Rush of Blood from Sony, and PlayStation VR Worlds from Sony. Those are the games that they named that we know of at this announcement. They also will be able to download a free app. All PSVR owners can download a free app called The Playroom. I don't know much else about that.
It's
maybe
like six small mini games.
Okay, so like your Wii
Sports. It's going to be like games that utilize the technology. Doesn't mean they'll be fun.
Which is good. It's good to have a little showcase.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. They're going to have a cinematic mode in the VR headset, which lets users enjoy a variety of content in a large virtual screen while wearing the headset. So it's not necessarily VR content, but you can still watch it in there. That's kind of interesting. I'm not sure if I would want to do that, but it's still kind of interesting. And there's a lot more info. We don't have to go through all of it right now. But I don't know if you have any general reactions to this, Derek. If you really want to dig into the details released, it's kind of in line with what most of us were predicting, somewhere in that 400 to 500 range.
Well, I got to say, I'll interject real quick, that I thought this was, and I think we said it on a show a couple weeks ago, that I personally thought it was going to be 500. So for them to come out and say it was 400, I actually my exact reaction was, oh,
I think, you know, I said 450. Did I say 450?
You may have said 450, and I thought you were too low. I thought it was gonna be 500 with a game, and I was hoping the game would be Gran Turismo, but that was just me hoping. I didn't actually have any reason to believe that, especially since Gran Turismo will probably be a selling point, so they're not gonna give that away for free. But right now, where I stand is, let's put it this way. If this was Nintendo announcing the NX, or even Sony coming out and announcing the PlayStation 5, I'll tell you right now, I would not have to look at a list of video games. I would simply get up out of my seat, get in my car, and drive to GameStop, walk in, talk to the manager I know, Tom, and say, hey, buddy, I'm here to pre-order Nintendo's new system or PlayStation 5, whatever it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So my point is the fact that I'm not doing that right now, like that's not my thought process, means that this isn't completely sold me. Now, that being said, it releasing at $400, and there are a few games that I really, really would want to play with this. Like, Gran Turismo is a big one that I would want to. I saw another article, I don't know if this is confirmed, saying Drive Club is supposed to be VR compatible.
I mean, they didn't list it. I would imagine they would list it if it were imminent.
Okay.
So
I'm thinking it'll be something they'll probably tack on. Yeah. Because to me, racing games are just the obvious, easy ones to
do. Racing, flying, and space seem to be the obvious
and
ones.
And even horror you could do easily as well.
Yeah, any kind of on-rails thing, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I'm thinking those two racers are a selling point, but where's the other game that I want that maybe a first-person shooter or a third-person shooter that implements this? My son's talking in his sleep. That's awesome. So basically, I want to get this. I'm probably going to get it, and I'll probably get it day one. But I still want to see more from it.
Yeah. No. I'm usually pretty optimistic. I'm usually the person looking on the brighter side of things. But everything about VR since the first announcements and talk started to roll out a couple years ago, and this started to become a reality. Reality. I have been a hard sell on this. Now, you always call me a hard sell on most things. I'm actually not. I'm pretty easily swayed on stuff. But when it comes to this new tech, and I know there's going to be people who totally disagree with me, this strikes me as a really nice, really cool peripheral for a system that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like you talked about, if it were a new NX or new Nintendo or new Sony console, and this was a main part of that experience, kind of like Sony's version of Kinect maybe, and it's something they suggest you use and say this is the only way to play or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than saying, hey, this is a way to play. It's almost like a new iteration on a phone, or like when Nintendo puts out the new 3DS or something like that. It's a new iteration on it that I'm like, yeah, sell me on it later. But for right now, I'm not really buying it. So I kind of feel that way with VR. And we've talked about this before. You're going to hear this from me over and over again every time VR comes up. I'm a dad. I'm married. I want that marriage to keep doing well. I have 5 kids. I don't want them to see me completely check out. So unless this becomes something that I don't start using till like midnight or 1 a.m., because my wife is a night owl like me, I just don't see it working. Like, is that when I use it? I plug in the VR headset after midnight any night that I want to play it, because now I can finally use it without shutting everybody out. There's just kind of a common sense treatment of others, especially those in your family, to not put on a headset that not only is it taking your attention like a TV would if you're watching TV, but now you actually can't even see in your peripheral anybody around you. You can't hear anybody around you unless they knock the headset off your head.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so everything about it to me just screams, hey, you want to start a fight with someone in your family? Put this on. So I don't know. I'm still skeptical of it simply because of my own personal family setup and the way things work in our family right now. I'm very fortunate to be able to play the games that I do on a screen, on a regular screen right now.
Yeah, where they can still interact with
you. They can still interact with me.
Feel like you're completely gone.
Yeah, my wife can kind of like lean over or yell from the other room like, hey, could you help me with this, whatever. And for the most part, unless it's an online game, you can't pause online games, people. Unless it's an online game, then I'm able to do that. But yeah, with VR, I just see that being a headache and a half. But let's talk more about VR as that comes out.
Yeah, let's get more details. Probably by next show, I'll tell you that I pre-order it, though.
So probably.
Everybody probably. Be prepared.
He's going to pre-order the Call of Duty Special Edition VR.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting Call of Duty.
So there's a lot of VR tech and game announcements. We'll talk more about those when we get a chance to and get all the details. There were some interesting topics and discussions during GDC that were being reported on that I thought I'd just mention. One of them was that they had a specialist come in, a psychologist come in, and talk to game creators and developers about the dangers of addiction, especially in regards to free-to-play games. So I thought that was interesting. You guys should go check out those articles. I think Polygon and GameSpot and maybe even IGN, they all have articles on this special presentation or panel that was run. I thought that was very interesting. So there was also a special panel with the Life is Strange devs, where they talked about impactful decisions in games, and they give you some behind the scenes on how they crafted the decisions in Life is Strange. Mm-hmm. There was a panel on branching dialogue, and they talked about how that can actually hurt a game's narrative more than help it, because you're not able to really craft a narrative. You're kind of creating fake options, and you're trying to weight one, but you want to give players the feeling of making a choice and you know, shaping the story, but the reality is you have a story you were trying to tell. So really interesting the way they talked about that, and these are all, you know, professionals in the industry talking about branching dialogue and game narrative and how they work together or don't. So a lot of interesting
things, and I'm just going to chime in a little bit and then we can move on real quick, but I think Telltale Games does a great job of that.
They are
telling one story. You're never, like, my experience is never really that different from, say, your experience. You might lose a character I didn't lose, but the overarching branching story, the one that matters, the narrative that we're all following, stays the same.
Yeah.
You even said it, you're like, season one, there was no way to avoid what inevitably happens.
Right.
No matter if you were good, bad, whatever.
Yeah.
So, and Mass Effect does that too. Mass Effect says, hey, here's all these characters. You can care about all of them. Some of them might die. Some might live. Some of them might do this, betray you.
Yeah.
But in the end, the same story was being told. So
yep.
You can do it. It's just how you execute it.
And yeah, and I think that was the idea. I think that was the idea was talking about how it, branching dialogue can hurt a game's narrative, especially if you're trying to tell a certain type of story. Mm-hmm. It can hurt it a little bit, but it doesn't have to. So I think that was part of the discussion, was how to do it the right way. I think a good example of a game that does it the right way that's a non-Telltale game is The Witcher 3. They give you a ton of dialogue options, obviously, mm-hmm. all throughout that game, and I do think there's even major decisions to make. Do I kill this character? In particular, there's one female character not too far into the game you have a chance to kill, or you could let her live, and I let her live, and I know many people killed her, but I let her live, and then later in the game she actually helps during a key battle. So kind of interesting the way that plays out. It didn't change the overall story, but
I killed her,
but the impact of that decision did come back later.
She annoyed me,
and I'm glad that I let her live, because later she actually sells a really helpful item. But whatever. All right, let's talk about something non-GDC, non-VR related, shall we?
Yeah, I guess.
There were a series of news stories that broke over the last few days that I thought were very interesting. And it began yesterday when basically Microsoft came out and said, we are open to cross-platform play when it comes to Rocket League with PC. But then they kept talking. And they kept talking about how, yeah, sure, and it doesn't have to stop with Rocket League and it doesn't have to stop with PC. That's basically what they said. It was one of those big major hints that, hey, Sony, we're cool with this if you are. That was the gist of the comment from the Microsoft side. And so I know we had a lot of conversations about it. People talked like, oh, this would be kind of cool, but oh, Sony will never go for that. Yeah, that'll never fly. But then just today, there was actually a response.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I can find it here. I might have tagged the wrong article. All I can tell you, I think I tagged the wrong article, so I apologize about that. But all I can tell you is this. Sony responded and said, we're open to it. We've been doing it since 2002. We're up for this. Basically what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And they, by that, they meant they've been doing cross-platform play with PC in different types of games, you know, since 2002, specifically with MMOs and a few other games. But all that being said, what do you think about the cross-platform play idea? Do you think it will happen, number one? And do you see it changing the way that we game at all?
I think it's going to happen on a few games. I think Rocket League will get approved and it'll actually happen. The problem is, well, I should say this. Them agreeing to it is nice, but they still have to work out the financials on how it would all work. And I don't know if Sony and Microsoft would work really well together doing that.
But why do they have to work out financials? I mean, basically you're just allowing, let's say in this case, the Rocket League devs or publisher, whoever it is, to essentially their servers would host all the players. They just let them connect to all these different platforms, similar to PC and PS4.
I mean, if that's all there is to it and there's nothing else behind it where they would have to figure out anything legal, then sure. If it's that simple, I just don't know if it's that simple. If it's just a simple switch that they flip and go, yeah, we can connect them all.
I feel like for competitive online play, as long as you're not trying to group up, like cooperative is a totally different story. Obviously, you can't communicate cross-platform and group up cross-platform and all that kind of stuff. But to be able to simply matchmake cross-platform, I could see that happening without too much difficulty. And I could be totally wrong on that. Basically, it seems like Microsoft and Sony would just have to kind of unlock their networks to connect to some of these other ones and then, you know, connect the bridges, however those things work. But I wouldn't imagine there'd be too much in terms of finance there. It would just simply take away from that feeling of this is the Sony community, this is my PlayStation community, and this is the Xbox community. I know that when I'm playing Rocket League and I see a PC gamer, I'm like, oh, I'm playing with PC gamers.
You know, I guess what I'm thinking, like, sorry to cut you off, but like, just so you know where my brain's going. Is, alright, so let's say I'm on the PS4 playing Rocket League, and you're, like you said, the servers are connected, like for instance, PC, I play with PC gamers on the PS4 right now, online,
right.
But I can't connect with them, like I can't get in a party with them through my PS4, through their PC,
right.
So I don't know if it's going to go deeper than that, if it's just going to be a switch that they flip and say, oh, Xbox guys can play with... That's stupid. Like, I don't want that. Like, that doesn't do anything. If you're on your Xbox One, and let's just, in fantasy world, pretend you don't have a PS4, and I've got a PS4 and I don't have an Xbox One, and I'm like, but Tim's my best friend, and I want to play Rocket League with him. And there's no way for us to party up and play, then it's no different than playing with PC gamers right now, which means it's nothing to me. It means nothing to me. Now, if they have it set up where, yes, somehow we can connect through our separate devices or consoles, party up, play together, then we're talking, this is cool. But that's where it came into, that's where I said, well, how would they do it financially? I have trouble believing, like, Sony would be like, yeah, Microsoft will just have to host everything. They would have to create the party set up.
That's the thing. I think that's what would be missing. Unless they do go that extra mile, I think it would just open up initially for that random matchmaking. It would just open up, you know, like, oh, there's 50,000 players online. Now, all of a sudden, there's 120,000 players online. Because now you've got three platforms.
Which is cool, I guess, if you care about the game not dying. But overall, this means nothing to me. My initial
for right
reaction,
now, it means nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
My initial reaction was, like, super cool. And then I thought about it. I'm like, there's no way Microsoft or Sony are going to work together.
Yeah.
To create something where you can actually connect these consoles.
It would have to be a situation where, let's say it's Division, for example. And inside the game, the Division, when you get in there, you log in, they have you set up with a totally different set of login credentials inside that game. So you're no longer signing in with your PSN. You're no longer signing in with your Xbox Live account. You're not signing in with your Division or Ubisoft Uplay login. Then I could see it kind of working, maybe. Then you group up based on that service. You know, I don't know. Maybe it'd have to be outside the box thinking for that to work. I'm with you. But anyway, I had the same reaction. I was like, cool. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, how though? So anyway, all right. Let's talk about some games that have been announced. PopCap. You familiar with PopCap? You love those mobile games?
Mm-hmm.
No. Their latest game is Plants vs. Zombies vs. Hearthstone. That's not what it's called, but that's kind of like the design of it. They're calling it Plants vs. Zombies Heroes, the Lawn of a New Battle. Only this time it's turn-based and it plays a lot like Hearthstone. So if you go onto Kotaku, they've got an article where they have some video and a lot of screenshots of this article. You know, who's the author here? Mike Fahey, and he writes this article and about his time playing the game, and it sounds kind of interesting. I won't read the whole thing. There's actually quite a bit that he goes through here, but he's saying it's not necessarily Plants vs. Zombies ripping off Hearthstone, and it's also not completely a Plants vs. Zombies game. It's kind of a mixture of both. It takes the best of both worlds. It's a lane-based digital trading card game for solo or online multiplayer with lots of Plants vs. Zombie charming personality. So, kind of a cool sounding game. They don't list a release date, but it's going to come out on iOS and Android soon. That's all they said. So, it says folks with the New Zealand iTunes accounts can download and play it for free right now. So, if you live in New Zealand, why? All right. I didn't have a good follow-up to that. Just ran out of brain power there. All right, so there was a game that came out on the DS. several years ago called Hotel Dusk. And so that same team has regrouped to tell a what they call hard-boiled detective story on the Nintendo 3DS. Now, I remember this game, Hotel Dusk, Room 215. I remember getting it from Gamefly in the mail. And you hold your DS sideways like a book. And it's an adventure game where you go around and you investigate this stuff about this murder. And it was very stylish, kind of that noir look. And so now that same team is putting together this game. It's a long title. It's called Chase Unsolved Cases Investigation Division Distant Memories. So it's a long title with two subtitles, basically. It's coming out to the eShop this summer. And it's basically... Oh, there was a sequel. I didn't know that. There was a sequel to Hotel Dusk called Last Window, The Secret of Cape West. I did not even know that it was that existed because it never came to the U.S. So there you go. But this one is coming to the U.S. So if you are into adventure games, mystery games, a little bit darker, if you have a 3DS, then be on the lookout for this one coming out this summer. It is. Just look for the game called Chase with a whole bunch of subtitles after it.
No, I'll pass.
All right, this next one really interests me. I have no idea. We haven't talked about Oddworld yet. You and I haven't, but I love the Oddworld series. Maybe we did talk about Oddworld before, but the Oddworld Inhabitants team has announced Oddworld Soulstorm. It's a brand new title in the series. From what I can gather, it sounds like a complete reimagining of Abe's Exodus, which was the PlayStation 1 follow-up to Abe's Odyssey, I think it was called, the first one. And they already remade the very first Oddworld, and they called it New and Tasty, and it's really great. It's on PC, Xbox One, I believe it's on Vita and PS4 as well. So go check that out if you haven't. It's a great side-scrolling kind of puzzle game, kind of stealth game. The controls remind me a little bit of old-school Prince of Persia, where you kind of walk panel by panel, and you jump up to pull yourself up. Really fun game, really quirky little game, very challenging. And it sounds like they're totally reimagining the second game in this. And they're saying that it's basically going to be built from the ground up. It's not just a really pretty cover on the existing game. That's kind of what New and Tasty was. It sounds like they're really putting this one back to the back from the very beginning. They're starting from scratch on this one. So I'm looking forward to it. It comes out second half of 2017. So it's a long wait yet for this one. But if you like Oddworld, there's more Oddworld coming. I'm pumped for that.
No, I have no desire. All right,
we are swinging a miss, swinging a miss. We're over three. Let's try number four. This one might interest you. You should click on this link and check out this video. Make sure you put it on mute so we don't all hear your video. This one was something that I watched a little bit of video of Marty and Alana from IGN playing. They were playing this at GDC. It's a game called Skylar and Plux Adventure on Clover Island. It is basically a throwback to old N64 games, you know, that 3D cartoony polygon adventure, action adventure game, a platforming game, you know, Donkey Kong 64 or Banjo-Kazooie is one that comes to mind. It kind of has that look, and that's one of the games that they reference in talking about this as well. So it's called Skylar and Plux, and if you go to IGN, to their GDC coverage, you can watch a little video of them playing it. It reminds them of Banjo-Kazooie, Ratchet & Clank, or the original Jack and Daxter. I can't pause the video here. It's getting kind of loud. There we go. I don't know how to make this quiet. I apologize. But anyway, go check that one out. I'm going to move on past it because the volume kept coming out of my computer there. But Siler and Plux Adventure on Clover Island. It definitely gave me a Jack and Daxter, Donkey Kong 64, Banjo-Kazooie vibe. So
I'm more excited about the next game.
Okay, good. We're finally getting one to your kind that you're kind of interested in. Okay, this one is called I Am Setsuna, and it's coming to the West for PS4 and PC this summer. And it sounds like there's a PS Vita version, but it's not going to leave Japan. It's not coming to USA, which is too bad. But they are going to localize this RPG for PC and PS4. It's a Tokyo RPG Factory developed game. It is called I Am Setsuna. This RPG launched last month in Japan. It has a Chrono Trigger-inspired battle system. Yeah. Back the authentic RPG gameplay, beautiful art design, and sorrowful story. We talked about emotional stories. So that's interesting. Of the classic Japanese RPGs to the current generation. It's led by director Atsushi Hashimoto and promises the narrative depth, impactful storytelling, and masterful character development of yesteryear. Basically saying, hey, remember when RPGs were awesome?
I was going to say. Straight shot at all the RPGs nowadays.
Totally, totally. It's like, hey, we're bringing it back. We're bringing back the good stuff. And so, yeah, I Am Setsuna. It's coming out this summer. I've got my eye on that one. Several people in our group shared the link to this. It's got a little teaser site you can go check out. The art already looks cool on the teaser site. So I'm looking forward to that. That's, to me, probably, unless I hear it's really bad, that's probably going to be an obvious buy for me. So
we could probably, I mean, I'm not going to do it right now, but it's already been released, correct, overseas.
Yeah.
So there probably are reviews.
Yeah, we should actually go check that out. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. cool.
So they usually are pretty on as far as what the game is, even for international games. So,
well, speaking of Japanese RPGs, Gamatsu has received word that Square Enix plans to launch Final Fantasy XV worldwide for PS4, Xbox One on Friday, September 30th. This has been info that Gamatsu corroborated by three independent sources who would, they say, have knowledge of the matter. This is all according to the website Gamatsu.com, so take that for what it's worth. But they say the release date's going to be officially announced during the Uncovered Final Fantasy XV event that's taking place here in a couple of weeks. I believe that Greg Miller and Tim Geddes from Kinda Funny are hosting that. So that'll be an interesting event, but it's possible that these independent sources have already leaked the release date of September 30th. And I think that would be a great release date for this game. It would kind of set...
Smart.
It would be really smart. It sets it apart from the rest of the games. It's actually not as far, you know, off in the distance as I thought. I wouldn't have been surprised if they had to push this one to 2017, believe it or not. Like, part of me just thought, like, it's Final Fantasy. They're going to delay it again. If they said September 30th and delivered on it, that's going to be huge. I think that would be a huge win for Square. And Gamatsu, again, says their sources in this case are reliable. However, they do say this. Given the sensitivity of the matter, and that within a company setting anything can change before it's made public, we're reporting this as a rumor until the release date is officially announced. So take that for what it's worth, but September 30th might be the day that you are allowed to play the full version of Final Fantasy XV.
That one I'm pretty excited for.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see if it's any good. I like the demo, but again, didn't beat it because I just don't care about demos.
Well, you do care about this. It's not a demo, but it is a beta. On their website, on their official community website, Gears of War 4, their team has announced it's going to be a beta. So here's what they say. Beginning on April 18th, fans who've played Gears of War Ultimate Edition on Xbox One or Windows will begin to receive tokens and waves for early access to the beta.
Nice.
It says, I feel like I missed a detail here. No, I didn't miss that part. Okay. Following the conclusion of the early access on April 24th, all qualifying Xbox Live Gold members on Xbox One will be invited to join the beta until it ends on May 1st. Okay, so this all starts on April 18th. If you play Gears of War Ultimate Edition, you'll start to receive tokens and waves. It doesn't say exactly how those are going to arrive, but I would say keep an eye out on your email address tied to your Xbox Live account, and maybe keep checking your messages in your Xbox Live account as well, just so you don't miss those if they come in. Then you'll have early access to the beta for a week. And then after that, everyone will have access to the beta until May 1st. In addition, they're extending the time frame for Gears of War Ultimate Edition players to qualify for early access from March 1st to April 11th. To qualify, just log on to Xbox Live and play Ultimate Edition by 11 p.m. Pacific, April 11th. I could do that. I should do that as soon as we're done here. Just turn on the game. Literally.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you if you
log
had it.
No, I haven't played it yet. No, because as I mentioned, I've got other games going on. But I've got it sitting there on my Xbox One. Came with the system. It's ready to go and installed. Why not? I should do that. That way I might get access to this beta.
Well, I told you I'd play co-op with you. It's a fun campaign.
That's probably why I keep avoiding it. I'm like, I don't want to play.
Oh, whoa. Rude. Hashtag jerk.
Yeah. Sorry about that. It's getting late. It's getting late. I'm grumpy.
Yes. Yeah, you say that with like a smile.
I know.
So grumpy.
Oh, I'm angry, you guys. All right, give me a 5-word or less reaction to these announcements. Number one, you're going to love this one. This has been a good week of news headlines. You've loved all these. Axiom Verge is coming to the Wii U and Xbox One.
I just want to cuss, so I'll leave it at that.
I just want to cuss. Five words, very good. The Vita version, they say, is on the home stretch. So that one's going to be wrapped up soon. That's what they've been saying for a year and a half, so we'll see. But it's coming to the Wii U and Xbox One. This seems to me like a great game for the Wii U, simply because of the history of Metroid and things like that. So,
it's terrible.
Yep. It's a good game. Not an amazing game. I do think it's overrated. Frank Clark was right. It is overrated, but it is a good game.
Did Frank Clark play it?
He said he did play it. He said he felt like the controls weren't quite spot on. He didn't like the Metroid comparison because he thought it was inferior. Yeah, he didn't like it. He thought it was okay, but he didn't think it was that great.
Okay.
I think it's better than he does. I think it is a great game.
As negative as he is about stuff, I usually agree with
him. I know. He's right a lot of times. Not always, but a lot of times. I will say, too, I do think it was overblown as a Game of the Year contender. I just don't think it was that good compared to other games. The Walking Dead Michonne, Episode 2, is dropping on March 29th. So if you played Episode 1 and you're waiting for Episode 2, that's coming out here in a few weeks. They are sticking to their promise so far of releasing these at a quicker pace.
Well, so, that's good. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. So that means, I would imagine, if they stick to this rate, we're looking at mid-April at the latest to get, maybe even early April, to get Episode 3. I guess, yeah, mid-April, yeah.
So, I almost bought the game. Like, I was really, really close to paying the $15 to get all three of the episodes. But I figure I'll wait. It'll go on sale for $5-6.
It probably will. Yep.
I should say half off. I'll get it for $7.50.
EverQuest Next has been officially canceled. Five words or less.
Nobody cares.
I think that's your response 50% of the time. Nobody
cares. See, hold on. Nobody cares. Literally, nobody cares. Works. Nobody cares. Literally. Literally. Nobody cares.
EverQuest 2 was an MMO that was one of the earlier ones that I played. I did like EverQuest 2, and then I discovered WoW and never played EverQuest 2 again after that. But there's a lot of fans of the EverQuest games, and for good reason. They are solid MMO games. And EverQuest Next was a good-looking game, the screenshots that I had seen. But it is now officially canceled, so now it's a good-looking game that no one will ever get to play. Stardew Valley. We mentioned this about how it had a high rating on Metacritic. It has officially now sold over 425,000 copies in 2 weeks on the PC. And that is remarkable for a game that is essentially a Harvest Moon clone sitting there on the Steam shop. I mean, that's the closest I can compare it to based on what I've seen. If you've played it and you know more details about this game, what makes it special? What makes it more special than something like a Harvest Moon? Let us know. I'm curious about this. Again, I won't play it on PC, but if it does happen to come over to consoles, I'm curious about it. I do like some simulation games depending on how they are, and everyone seems to be loving Stardew Valley. 425,000 copies in 2 weeks. That's remarkable.
I just don't understand people.
All right, give me five words or less. There was leaked footage of a, and this might be announced by the time this airs, there's leaked footage of a Star Wars Trials on Tatooine VR lightsaber game.
I thought it was confirmed.
Oh, did that get confirmed today?
I think it got confirmed because it was on, I think it was on the Wikipedia PlayStation VR, like the official Wikipedia page.
Just today?
They had listed out all the games. All
right, well then take away the rumor side of that, and what do you think about, just give me your reaction, it doesn't take five words, give me your reaction in general to the idea of a VR lightsaber game.
Sounds cool. That being said, I've played Kinect games, and I've watched videos of Gollum, which is a VR game, and the animations when you're swinging a sword or a lightsaber or something looks janky and stupid, and it's usually like a child's play type game. And I guarantee you that's exactly what they're going to do with Star Wars. They're going to make this game for five-year-olds knowing they're going to sell it to 50-year-old men who are Star Wars freaks. It's going to be trash is what I'm saying.
It looks kind of cool. I like the perspective of, hey, I'm holding this thing, but... Man, just like you mentioned, with whether it's Kinect or whether it's the Wii games they've tried to put out that have that kind of a, you know, experience Star Wars like never before. Like, I feel so negative and skeptical when this stuff comes up because I'm just like, nope, hard pass. That's gonna be awful. No thanks. So yeah, I'm not that excited about that. But anyway,
not at all.
So that does it for headlines for now. I'm sure that even between late this afternoon, early evening, when I stopped checking the news, I'm sure there's even been more announcements that have come out. And then between now and when you guys hear this on Monday, or perhaps late Sunday night, there's going to be other pieces of news that have come out. So feel free to keep sharing those in the group. Thank you for those of you who are active in the group and continuing to post, you know, new announcements and opinions. And what do you guys think about this? And I've really been excited to see the conversations. I don't know about you, but I've liked seeing the conversations that are starting up in our group on a regular basis. Whether it's here's what I'm playing now and here's what I think, or whether it's here's an announcement, what do you guys think about this? I've loved to see the conversations that have been going so far.
Yeah, that's what I want. I'm liking it too. I really want a community where we all get to know each other, and that we can just share, like, hey, I bought this new game. Like, that's all I'm sharing.
Yeah.
Cool, you know, or, you know, ask questions about the show, or I like the fact that our topic for this week came from one of our listeners, Gaston.
Yeah.
Gaston. Or wait, you said his name right.
Gaston. Yeah.
Gaston. See, I screwed it up again. So Gaston was the one that actually said he wanted to hear our opinions on this, and so he helped create this main part of our show. So I like that. I like that that's what it's turning into, and I hope it... I'm not saying we need to get huge, but I'd like to get us a little bit bigger. So if you like our show, share it with people. Get people in our group. Get them listening to the show. Give us more feedback, not on how long our show is. We don't care about that. Feedback on, like, stuff that you guys want us to talk about, or just anything like that.
Yeah. Yep. And there are times when a conversation like this about emotional games or something else might bump out something we had originally planned to talk about. And that's kind of the case this week, where it's like, yeah, this is interesting. We got a lot of feedback on this. Let's talk about this topic. So we're always open to hearing your ideas on what to cover and what to discuss. Of course, we do come from the angle of being dads, and many in our group are not parents, but that doesn't matter. I mean, we are all gamers, and again, we've talked about this. We're all from different walks of life, different opinions on politics and all sorts of different things, but we can still talk about our number one favorite hobby, and that is gaming. We can still talk about life stuff, too. Whether or not you have kids, you can still relate to what it's like to be part of a family or what it might be like to be a parent, or maybe you can share a different perspective than what we're sharing. So the idea is not to say, you know, we're called fathers of the grind. You must be a father. It must be parent-focused centered. The idea is to have a conversation, and our perspective just happens to be, hey, we're dads, and this is something that we still love, even though we're dads. So yeah.
Yeah, I look at our show, and the 11 shows that we've now recorded, 98% of our show is talking about video games.
Yep.
So
yep, you're right about that.
It's for everybody who likes games.
Derek, anything else you want to cover in terms of deals, or maybe a news headline, or anything else that that's popped up recently?
No, I think we covered everything that's going on right now. Like said earlier, we are recording earlier, so if something crazy happens from now until Thursday, it's not going to be on here, but I don't think it will be that big.
Now, today was voting day for both of our states. You live in Florida, I live in Ohio. They are big key states in this election cycle, in this primary, to get these delegates and yada, all that stuff. So did you vote today?
Yes, of course. I voted for Derek Teague.
I went in and voted as well. And my kids' reactions to that were pretty hilarious. But we took the kids in to boat, as my daughter said. So that was interesting. But anyway, glad you did your civic duty. Just checking in on you, man. Just trying to make sure you make the right decisions in life.
Yeah, they had all these weird names on there I didn't know about, like Trump and all that stuff. And I just wrote in other and put Derek the Man T.
Yeah, good.
So we'll see if that guy wins.
Yeah, cool. All right, good. All right, for mine, I put Sass and Beba Hanny. That was the name. That was the name I put. Sass and Beba Hanny. President.
He did. He loved the way you pronounced
he totally did. Sass and Beba Hanny. All right. Derek, I don't know if you have any words of wisdom for us this time. I know sometimes I feel like we're draining all your wisdom out too rapidly. Do you have any strong words of wisdom you want to pass on to our listeners this week?
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk, you know, this being an election day or election season, I want you to understand the importance of you guys going out and voting and supporting other idiot humans to run your lives. It's really important that you speak your mind and speak your voice, because it's not going to be heard anyways. Yeah.
Especially on Facebook. So make sure you put your opinions on Facebook. It's very important.
Yeah, I did today. I did. I took a shot at Bernie Sanders for fun. It was all in fun.
If you don't post your political opinions on Facebook, then you're not doing it right.
Yes, so I guess my words of wisdom is vote, because it's really important, because everybody tells you it is, but it really doesn't do anything. But also, make sure when you vote, you also put who you voted for and then blast everybody else that you don't agree
with. Yeah, just make sure we all know that you've removed those from your friends list who disagree with you, because they're all idiots. That's usually the most effective way to win people over.
Start a war over it.
Cool, yeah. That's the combo wisdom from both of us. We both contributed to that, right? Did I help?
Yeah, I think you did a great job.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I also want to mention that Donald Trump is actually doing great things for this nation, and here's why I say this.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't edit this out. This is truth. I'm going to bring in truth here.
I already hit stop. I can't do it.
Donald Trump is helping our nation because he's the only man in the United States of America that can bring Democrats and Republicans together.
That's so true. We are united in our disapproval of that man. That is very true.
Which is funny that he keeps winning states. He won Florida. I don't know if he won Ohio, but he won
Florida. I got to throw this quick thing in there. I know we're not a political show. This is pretty funny. My wife, Katie, she does not follow politics at all. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, getting ready to vote today, she was like, I'm just going to look at some of the candidates, some of their interviews and speeches. And so she watched like two or three Trump interviews, and then she texted me while I was at work, and she goes, I just watched some Trump interviews, and what is wrong with that guy? And then I was like, I don't know. That's what everyone's been wondering. And she goes, is there no one else who wants to be president? It's like, yeah, I know. Our options are limited. Anyway, all right, man. Well, thanks for sharing your wisdom. Thanks for talking games. And everybody, we will be back with episode 12 very soon. You guys take care.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Right, don't hit stop on the recording. Just leave it record. I got to refill my water. I'm all dried out.
That's what she said.